Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and we have another huge show for you. On the line with me is my partner in crime for the moment, MTG Yellow Belt himself, Cameron. Cameron, what's up, man?
I'm feeling really empty.
Yeah, this is the second week we've missed Dustin due to his moving to a country halfway across the world.
So, and here's the thing. We think Dustin is in Japan, but he could literally be anywhere. Literally
could be anywhere.
Yeah.
And you might say, hey, why don't you guys just tweet at him? But here's the thing. That's Cameron that's on that account.
What?
I know, right?
Weird.
So, and if you say, what about cellular devices? Well, good idea, but hasn't worked out. So hopefully everything's cool and his move is going well, but it's obviously very high stress for him right now. And so we're pumped for him. Mm-hmm. We're very pumped for his, because this has been a long time coming, but you know, we'll let you know whenever he's back on.
Yeah.
We'll keep the chair warm for him, and we'll feel bad about our trades independently of him being on the show.
Absolutely. And this is a dark, dark time for my trades, let me tell you.
Oh, no. Oh, no. So, Cameron, we kind of failed a little bit as a Magic podcast this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
You played not at all.
I worked all weekend. And so, yeah, I didn't even have a chance to step inside my shop to even smell the new pre-release cards.
And it just, I mean, if you're out there, and I know one of our listeners already has, and open an expedition land and want to tweet it out, it really affects Cameron like a lot.
Mm-hmm. I got like this bug.
Yeah. He's like, maybe I should just buy a box. Maybe I should buy a case. Like, Cameron, slow down. Let's talk about this, right?
Yeah.
You know, want the card, buy the card.
Oh, man. And then like I'm on a Magic Facebook group and I see a guy in the local shop gets, you know, a Scalding Tarn. And I'm like, oh, man, that's so saucy. I want that so badly. And I'm just going to go and drop $1,000 on cards just for one.
Hey, dude, you worked all weekend.
That's right.
You're worth it.
I deserve this.
You deserve it, right? and like, what's the environmental footprint on us treating ourselves? It's not like we're buying a Lamborghini, right?
Exactly.
We're actually being good to Mother Earth. Just a slice, just a little slim piece of cardboard. That's all we're wanting.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I hear a silent like whisper of Dustin somewhere saying, no, don't do it. But yeah.
If you listen closely, you can hear him scream. So you didn't get a chance to play this weekend because you were working a cooking show, which I think is great.
That's what I do.
I have to admit, I had to choose. So this weekend for me was also very packed. And I had to choose between playing Standard and playing the pre-release. And as you know, Cameron, my thoughts on the Standard have been very, very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially pre-Dragons coming out, I really liked Theros Khan's Standard.
Yeah.
Post-Dragons and Origins, I still liked it, but not quite as much. But I would still say this past year has been one of the best Standards ever. My rule of thumb is to just have one Standard deck and kind of swap them in and out, and then keep multiple older cards for Modern and Legacy and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first Standard in a long time that's made me break that.
Wow.
Because I've enjoyed so many of the decks. There's been such a diversity. And, you know, I showed up to the shop to play like an 8-man, you know, and because there were only 8 people wanting to play Standard. Everybody else was so geared up for the pre-release and wanting to open expedition lands and all this.
It's very common.
But as a seasoned, can we call me a seasoned player, right? A guy that's been FNMing for a while now. I knew that this Standard was special, and I needed to send off the old girl in style, you know, because it's just been so exceptional. And Cameron, I'm just going to, because we like to incorporate music into the show.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one song when something is over and it's heartbreaking? What's the one song circa the 90s that you're going to play?
There's so many. I mean, can I just choose one?
There is, in fact, one best one.
Okay.
And that is End of the Road. Am I right?
Do tell.
Could anything be more fitting for this standard?
No, I don't think so.
No, no. And I obviously, it's not a true conclusion because a lot of these decks are going to carry over. But, I mean, this is the first standard in a while where we had multiple combo decks, multiple control decks, multiple mm-hmm. aggro decks. And I feel like people are going to look back on it and especially see the success of Mono Red in the Pro Tour and go, oh, you know, it wasn't really that great. It was.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always contend that the GP Pro Tour level, you know, in Limited and in Constructed, exists in kind of a separate sphere from what your shop is going to be like, right?
Yeah.
And this standard was great at the shop level because it was affordable and it allowed people to vary what they were doing. Whereas, you know, the previous standard, RTR Theros, mm-hmm. the devotion standard, right?
Yeah.
Was horrific.
No, you're nobody totally right.
Nobody ever wanted to switch decks. Nobody ever wanted to play anything than the thing that they were playing. And it got to the point where the final Theros set came out. And you were, was there any card in this set? Nope.
No, there's no shift whatsoever. I mean, you're totally right, though. I mean, it was crazy to be playing against some, you know, younger players who have like a cheap deck, but it's actually a very effective cheap deck, whether that is a mono red or the blue white heroic, which, I mean, I always felt like I was under pressure by these decks that, I mean, overperformed and undercosted. And I mean, there's something to be said about that.
Right. And I don't know what's happening where we've become like the people that give WotC all this credit. Right.
Yeah. I mean, let's just go back to like episode 4, I think. And
yeah. Yeah. I hated Standard. And I actually, I mean, this is going to upset some people, but I really think Standard was better this year than Modern or Legacy.
Yeah.
Because Legacy, this is a whole different conversation, but Legacy, I think, needs to be shaken up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Modern has been, you know, they're just really non-interactive decks, right? So anyway, I just kind of shed a single tear. So I showed up with Esper Dragons, and I wanted to keep practicing with that deck because I'm wanting it to be something that I think I'm going to be playing the first few weeks of the next standard. Mm-hmm. But B, it's also something that I feel is really good in my local meta. And I went ahead and took down the 8-man. You know, that was great. And I want to give you this situation, Cameron, if this is a dirtbag thing to do.
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
So I'm playing against Green Devotion.
Okay.
Okay. And as you might expect, this is a Nykthos, Genesis Hydra,
yep.
Nylea deck. As you might imagine, my matchup against that deck is really good because mm-hmm. I'm playing Wrath Effects, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have an Ojutai to his empty board and empty hand, and he's at 15.
Okay.
Okay. And I said, hey, here are 3 Salumgar Scorn in my hand. Do you want to keep playing this game? And he goes, yes. And we went through the whole thing. I feel like he was kind of upset that I did that.
Okay.
I mean, is that something you do?
No, you know, I mean, that's something I always feel like I almost feel bad after a time because I do play the games through without even thinking of my opponent sometimes just because I'm like, oh, I'm going to win. I'm so excited to beat this 7-year-old, you know? No, I mean, that's interesting, dude. And I mean, you thought he was like totally offended by this or taken aback? Or?
No, I would say I left a bad taste in his mouth. He seemed like a nice guy. Okay. You know, nothing against him. And I wonder, as you know, when I'm playing, I'm very in my own head. So I probably put it in such a way that was not like,
yeah,
hey, partner.
Sure,
just so you know. But there is also that stigma of like, hey, counter spells, you know.
Yeah.
That's like a jerk thing to have. But if I had 3 heroes downfalls, there would be like no difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I prefer my opponents to show me that they have the win,
mm-hmm.
right? So we don't have to go through all these machinations and then I'm just dead anyway.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he was playing that one of uncounterable green card that he could win with the 8-8.
Gaia's Revenge.
There we go. Yeah. So maybe he was just holding out hope. He's like, no, I'm going to keep on playing this. And Who knows?
Yeah, know. Just for the record, he was at 5 mana. Yeah. So, like, he had 5/4. So, anyway, Gaia's Revenge did take into account, and I just thought, hey, I'll show him, but we played it out anyway. Mm-hmm. Whatever. He was a good opponent, but I also beat a red-white dragons deck, which was interesting.
Okay.
And then I beat a rug deck that was... It was actually quite good. It matches up well against what I'm doing, you know. So there is that, but I don't know that it necessarily had great matchups across the board. So anyway, that was my FNM. And, you know, the other thing I want to mention with this is, and this kind of came up a little bit on Twitter, the reason I skipped the pre-release is, A, you know, my aforementioned love of the standard. But pre-releases have been less and less fun for me, and not for the reason you might think. It's not because there's a lot of new players.
It's because you're playing the Married Guide flight. I mean, so it's just a bunch of...
Well, no, here's what I run into. It's a lot of spike players, and there's a lot of problems with the prize, them being after the prizes and trying to get the cards.
Mm-hmm.
That there's been kind of some issues. I think I mentioned this before, but my shop... at the time had to go to no bags could be on the table or any card boxes because so many people were stuffing their decks.
Yeah.
You know, and so like whenever you get into that kind of thing, it's like this takes away from what this pre-release is meant to be.
Sure.
And I don't know. It's just like, well, I'll take that $50 or $75 and put it towards the cards that I want. Because unlike other people, I really like this set. So yeah, that's kind of where I was at with the pre-release. But dude, we have got to talk about new standard. Are you ready for new standard?
Oh, no, but yes. Yes, I am.
All right, so I've jotted down several deck ideas. We're going to talk about them on the flip side. All right, Cameron. So the question is, how much Battle for Zendikar have you purchased, pre-purchased?
4 Shambling Vents, and that's it. So, like, I think the Shambling Vents are just insanely underpriced still as of the Sunday. And everything else, you know, I'm just kind of waiting. I mean, I think I want Obnixilis. And, you know, there's just some other, like, uncommons and stuff that I'm looking for that I can just pick up whenever.
Yeah, you know, Gideon's kind of been the breakout card in terms of cost all of a sudden. I believe it's at 40 now plus.
Wow. Okay.
I got asked at the store if I thought it was as good as Elspeth Knight Errant. I laughed in that person's face. I think it's a very, very good card and will probably be one of the defining standard cards. Anyway, I find myself in the position of defending Oblivion Sower again.
Okay. Yeah.
And the more I think about this card, the more I am convinced it is nuts. Nuts.
Like villainous wealth nuts? Is it that nuts?
Oh, you're throwing my mistakes in my face. Mm-hmm. First of all, I love villainous wealth. Right?
That's a great card, yeah.
Empty the Pits I liked better for the record, and it did not see play.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? But do you remember what Oblivion Sower does? Let's just play this game, Cameron.
Okay, yeah.
Why it's
off,
good.
Off the top of my head, he is the one that can exile something and then bring it back into play under your... I don't even remember now.
Yeah. Okay. So the more I read this, the more I'm convinced. So it is 6 mana for a 5/8 Eldrazi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you cast it...
That's right.
Not when it enters the battlefield. When you cast it, target opponent exiles the top 4 cards of his or her library... Then you may put any number of land cards that player That's owns from exile onto the battlefield. So, they can counter it. And if they have any number of lands in exile, they come into play on your side of the board. Right?
That's now, great.
What would, and this is previous standard, right? So we don't know how many lands are going to be in exile that are going to be usable in these theoretical decks, right? But last standard, this last year, what would a spell that says uncounterable put all of the lands your opponent controls in exile into play on your side, untapped? What would that spell cost? 3 mana? 4 mana?
Maybe, yeah.
4 mana, 5 mana to be playable?
Mm-hmm.
And this comes with a 5/8 body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realize some of the people that are talking about this haven't played against Primeval Titan outside of the context of Modern. But guys, in Standard, Primeval Titan, if it got more than two lands, like, you were very dead.
Yeah.
You were very dead. You were just so far behind at that level. And I think this has the potential to do those kinds of things. Obviously, is it as good of a card? No. The other kind of catch with this card is it is, you know, mostly going to be receiving fetch lands, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see, because, like, you know, whenever you're playing these decks and you're using delve spells, you're almost always exiling fetch lands. So it's going to be interesting to see what colors the Eldrazi deck plays with, or maybe you just put some of the dual lands in there so you can get them with fetch lands, that kind of thing. But in my theoretical Eldrazi deck, he's been a 4 of. I just think he is such a sleeper card. I know the value's down because he's in the event deck, but him and Shambling Vent are the two cards that I'm just... Like, I feel like Gideon's, like, people are discovering where it's at exactly. Oblivion Sower and Shambling Vent are way better than people are giving them credit for.
I mean, I do agree. I mean, it is an interesting card. There's so much spiciness to this being cast, right? And I'm wondering, I mean, does it even have to be in an Eldrazi deck? I mean, could this find a place in something else, right? Being colorless or whatever. It just, it is really, really interesting.
You bring up an interesting question, though. Like, if you're a control deck, you know, because before, control decks just didn't have access to Primeval Titan, right? And I don't know. I don't know, like, if that's something that's going to see play outside of that. Now, Cameron, you might ask, why do I think Shambling Vent's so much better than I did before when I was really into it before, right?
Yeah, please make my investment even that much better.
Okay, so what does the ability Awaken do?
It makes all lands, what, like a 3-3, 4-4, depending on what the Awaken cost is, right?
All
right,
yeah, I'm gonna read you the text.
Okay.
If you cast this spell for its Awaken cost, also put however many +1/+1 counters on target land. You control it, and it becomes a 0/0 elemental creature with haste. So just putting this out here, you can put those counters on a Shambling Vent, and then the +1/+1 counters, I believe, will stack on top of it becoming a 2/3 lifelinker. So if you have Ruinous Path and you cast it for 7 mana, and you put those 4 tokens on your or 4 +1/+1 +1 counters on your Shambling Vents, you have a 6/7 lifelinker that can activate for 3 mana. And yeah, either in Abzan midrange or in Esper, you're going to be playing those cards. There's the counter spell that has Awaken as well, that you can put that on your Shambling Vent and then activate and swing the next turn.
Oh, man.
I mean, yeah. So,
I mean, there's even like a return a target creature, sorcery or instant something that has Awaken that, yeah, Clutch Occurrence or something like that. I mean, it's cheap casting cost. You know, that's major tempo right there as well.
Yeah. Oof. So,
yeah.
Those two cards we were high on before. They're my two sleepers of the set, the cards that I'm really liking. I would also advise you, because I don't want to plagiarize what he said on Pat Chapin's podcast, he went into some really interesting stuff with Collected Company decks on Top Level Podcasts. So if you're not listening to them, you should definitely be listening to them anyway. Like, those guys are actually very good at Magic. We are very mediocre at Magic, but we sound great doing it, don't we, Cameron?
Absolutely.
You don't hear Boys to Men on their podcast, I'll tell you that much. All right, so Cameron.
What's up?
Here in front of me, I have a list of scrambled notes, right? I just talked about the cards that I thought were a little underrated by through my testing and that kind of thing. So I didn't really want to give any... I know you mentioned maybe we should do a segment on cards that are rotating, and I shot that down like hard.
Yeah, I just want to say I miss Thoughtseize. That's all I want to say.
You can just play Modern or Legacy. You're going to play with Thoughtseize there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I had that sad moment where I put away my Scry lands.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be honest with you. Draws are much more rough without the Scry lands. You don't realize it, how much they did for some of these, especially three-color decks.
Oh, yeah.
Until you play without them. And, you know, the mana is better with the fetch lands. but man, the draws are not smooth, comparatively speaking. So there's a couple of control decks that I have kind of like sketched out, right? Okay. So obviously we would start, what's the obvious choice for you here, Cameron?
Well, Esper Dragons, right?
Right. It's losing not a ton. Almost everything that it's losing, you can come up with a pretty decent replacement, mm-hmm. right? Now, I also have a deck I call Esper Dudes.
Okay.
That's an Ojitai's Command deck that will play the blue and a black Eldrazi with Death Touch. We'll play Jace. Mm-hmm. And it'll play a bunch of, like, you know, might play, not Seeker of the Way, the one in a white, Soulfire Grandmaster, that kind of thing. You know, because we always get so wrapped up in, obviously, Soulfire Grandmaster works better with burn cards. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can use him in a shell where you're just replicating counter spells. And that's okay, perfectly okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there also might be some a blue-black kind of Eldrazi control deck. One of the mythic Eldrazi says, when your opponent puts a land into play, you draw two cards, right? And so you can lock out the game in such a way where you're kind of controlling things, and then you kind of put them in a situation where they can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Sire of Stagnation. It's for a blue and a black for a 5/7. And whenever a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, that player exiles the top two cards of his or her library, and you draw two cards.
That's great. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So it's good. The thing I'm concerned about is that that's too easy to play around. I don't know if you've ever encountered Consecrated Sphinx.
I know of it. I couldn't tell you what it does.
It's a big creature. It was an old control win condition, and it said when your opponent draws a card, you draw two.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So those are my kind of control shells. I think right now, Sultai is on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
Every kind of version of that deck I've put together just feels slow,
mm-hmm.
like really slow. Losing Satyr Wayfinder is a huge problem. Okay, so there's some control decks for you.
Okay.
What do you think about aggro? What do you got for me in terms of aggro, Cameron?
Oh, man. I mean, there's just a lot of interesting cards. I'm trying to remember the... Well, I mean, there's cards like Drana, Liberator of Malakir, who I mm-hmm. think is...
Man, those fantasy names just roll off your tongue,
right?
Don't they?
Yeah, yeah, they totally do. But man, that's a good card. And this feels like it fits some sort of... I don't know what type of aggro shell, red, black, maybe it's a Mardu aggro deck, but just, or maybe even Abzan, right? Plus one counter on each attacking creature. That could get out of hand very, very quickly.
Yeah, Drana is, I'm concerned her mana cost is going to take her out of, because she's double black, if memory serves me correctly, the theoretical Abzan deck, which might, you know, I picture the Abzan aggro deck porting over in such a way where you're playing Rashaka Death Dealer, where you're playing Warden of the First Tree.
Mm-hmm.
You might even be playing the new Gideon, or not new Gideon, Magic Origins Gideon in this deck. Very kind of classic aggro, kind of more of a Zoo vibe than, or Naya Blitz, not the kind of Abzan that we have now, which is, I mean, it might play Seed Rhino, but it doesn't have to.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
The problem is the mana is way worse. No mana confluence, no scry lands. You still have the tri lands. Then you have this super awkward fetch land mana base that's really incomplete. So things that are the cons tribes, the fetch land mana base is worse than the old shards.
Yeah.
Because in Esper, you can play two sets of fetch land. You see what I mean?
For sure, yeah.
So it's weird, but... Here's what I have. Just a rough list of potential aggro decks.
Okay.
Mardu Dragons, Abzan Aggro, Jeskai Aggro, which would be like a Manus Rider.
Interesting. Okay.
Deck, which would play Monastery Mentor, Wild Slash, I assume. And then, by the way, here's one that's fallen off, that there's actually more pieces than you might think. Jeskai Tokens.
Yeah.
Being a thing. Is it worse than it was before? Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot... Yeah, no, you're right. There's a lot of pieces there that could set it to be a staple still. Yeah.
Yeah, and here's my thoughts with Jeskai Tokens. If you live in a world where you're allowed to sit around for five turns, right, and kind of be under no real pressure and play things like Dragon Fodder, you know, you could really, really, really kill someone pretty quickly with, you know, once you're able to go off, right?
Yeah.
The thing that really makes Jeskai tokens maybe a non-thing is the presence of Dromoka's Command, right? Mm-hmm. Which will likely be in the Abzan aggro deck or Abzan, kind of more of an Abzan mid-range, which I would assume would be the Megamorph deck.
Yeah.
So I feel like the Seed Rhino deck is going to become the deck that has the Den Protector combo in it.
Yeah.
The other card which shall not be named because I called it high garbage. So there's that. Then there's, I mean, we haven't really seen the teamer deck become a thing. Like it floated around a little bit at the beginning of the year. I messed around with it. You messed around with it. But there are a bunch of good cards still, like Savage Knuckleblade. Yeah. There's the Surok that gives things haste. You know, there's some pieces to that are still quite good. And in fact, a lot of that is not rotating, right?
For sure.
While we're on this topic of teamer, I should mention Rattleclaw Mystic is likely very good in the next standard format. Because if you look at all the other, quote, mana guys that are running around, Rattleclaw Mystic is a lot better than almost all of them.
Yeah.
So remember how we talked about Sylvan Caryatid kept Rattleclaw Mystic kind of
at bay,
down before?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would almost always rather play Sylvan Caryatid. Well, now Rattleclaw Mystic is for real.
Yeah. And it's explosive, too, when you morph it. I mean, it can really, like, make you go off. It's great.
Yeah. Now, the deck I'm predicting to be not quite as much of a thing is Atarka Red.
Mm.
And here's my logic there. The Atarka Red deck plays a bunch of one-drop red guys. And if you're running into Abzan aggro, Jeskai aggro, and Abzan midrange, or maybe even teamer, you're likely not going to win that fight on a one-on-one basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have recursion. They have ways to fight on that axis. And a lot of the burn is getting worse, right? Mm-hmm. And the searing whatever, the cheese hands, that's gone. And that actually really hurts the red deck quite a bit. Same with Eidolon of
the Great Revel.
The great, fun police card.
Yeah, yeah.
The card that shows up and you're like, oh, great. This is going to be a fun game now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the last one that I wanted to talk about in terms of the aggro decks is the green-red landfall deck, which I think will probably not have enough support right off the gate, but the Scythe Leopard deck I think could be pretty interesting. Allies, I'm projecting, is not good enough right off the bat, but that's just a guess. So, and then the last deck that I have kind of sketched out is good old Ulamog Ramp, which I think is very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
I know Dustin does not. So, look, Cameron, I just read through like 15 potential decks.
Yeah.
What are you playing week one?
Oh, week one, it's going to be Esper Dragons. I mean, I have most of the pieces. Everything else I can get pretty cheaply. Will it be the best deck? I mean, who knows? I mean, it still has some really good cards. You know, but I mean, I'm kind of holding out hope that, I mean, even though there are a lot of great lands that allow you to play multiple colors, even three or four if you wanted to, I'm wondering if maybe like a mono white deck could be in the running for having some potential. There's just so many good white cards that have potential. It's just, I don't know if they have potential together to be a good deck.
Cameron, are you secretly a white weenie?
Oh, come on, look at me. Yes, player. Of course I am.
I mean no one is ever like, man, I shouldn't say no one. There's actually a pro player that's quite famous for playing mono white strategy. So hey, if that's your bag, man, fantastic. No, I mean, here's what I'll tell you. My testing around with Esper Dragons is you're probably like, I keep upping the number of ultimate prices.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing Jace in it. I know you've been not playing with Jace.
No, and I need to. Yeah.
I think that might need to change in the near future because the thing about Esper Dragons that's changing is the low end of the curve. The high end of the curve is all the same. It's the dragons, it's Dig Through Time, it's Crux of Fate, whatever. But the kind of low level, you're missing Thoughtseize, Hero's Downfall, you know, Dissolve. And so, you know, you kind of have to switch that out. Now, I've also been playing with a couple anticipates in the deck, and I wonder if Standard is slowing down enough to where anticipate's going to be good again. I don't know if you saw, but anticipate's going to be the upcoming F&M promo,
mm-hmm.
and they reprinted anticipate in Battle for Zendikar. Yeah.
And I mean, I can't remember where I read it, but the theory is that anticipate is better because of Jace, because you're, you know, it's just one additional card that you can quickly get in to your graveyard, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah.
Yeah, actually, that's something I found. I read that on Channel Fireball, I think.
Okay.
I want to say it was Caleb Durward, but I was just playing one Anticipate in my Esper Dragons list for a while, just as because I was playing three Jaces,
mm-hmm.
and I actually reduced the number of counter spells because you want things that you can play sorcery speed when you're playing with three Jaces.
Sure.
So I was just playing the four Scorn and two Dissolve, and then I was playing I cut two counter spells basically,
mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily 100% correct, but it's definitely something that I tried. I'm going to be playing Esper as well, but I gotta be honest with you, dude, I'm eyeballing this Ulamog ramp deck as something I can get into.
I feel like I need a little bit of a change in play style. I mean, I've been playing the control thing for almost a year now, and I was having so much fun back during the beginning of M15 with Naya, and then it fell off or whatever, but I don't know. I think, yeah, something a little bit more, I don't know, hasty would be fun to check out and try.
How do you feel about Manus Riders?
I have four of them.
I think that, I mean, again, we'll see how this thing lines up. But I feel like the Jeskai aggro deck, if things kind of devolve into an aggro-centric metagame or, you know, mid-range and aggro, that line is so difficult to define.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm talking about is a deck that the powerful creatures are at the three drop spot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about Savage Knuckleblade, you know, Manus Rider, or, you know, Monastery Mentor, decks that center around those guys,
mm-hmm.
or the green red deck might center around, is it Undergrowth Champion? The mm-hmm. guy that doesn't take damage. You just remove counters off of him.
Okay.
Anyway, that's what I mean by aggro,
mm-hmm.
and not like affinity where you're just vomiting a bunch of one drops.
Sure.
That's not what we're talking about. And so I think Manus Rider is ideally situated for those matchups because A, you're playing burn alongside them so you can pick them off. But also the fact that he's vigilant, right?
Yeah.
Really can swing races in your favor. So or force them to, you know, use a removal spell along with an attack, that kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
I really like Manus Rider's future, and I really, really like Rattleclaw Mystic's future as well. But, all right, dude, that is a bunch of my armchair quarterbacking. I don't know if it made anything clearer to you.
Oh, just makes me more excited for Standard again. I mean, this time of year is just, it's the best time to be a Magic player, I think. Expensive time to be a Magic player. One of the two.
I was going to say, that's the thing. With rotation happening more quickly, and what's going to be really confusing is when that quasi-rotation happens and mm-hmm. Cons of Tarkir is going to fall away, mm-hmm. and then we have Fate Reforged and Dragons, then the two Zendikar sets, and mm-hmm. then the two whatever sets are after that.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like, wait, what? you know, what's in Cons versus what's in Fate Reforged is like completely, you know,
it's a different
muddled in my head.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, dude, are you ready to become a Spike?
Oh, yeah.
All right, Cameron, as you know, and as the listeners might not, every single week, without fail, no matter what.
Absolutely.
We have,
yeah.
Yeah. As constant as the tides, Cameron becomes a Spike. So, Cameron, what card did I ask you to evaluate this week on your long-standing journey to become a better player?
Yeah, this week you gave me a little card called Squadron Hawk. He costs uh-huh. one and a white. It's a bird with a flying and a power and toughness of 1/1. And then when Squadron Hawk enters the battlefield, you may search your library for up to three cards named Squadron Hawk, reveal them, put them into your hand, then shuffle your library. This is an awesome card. I mean, I never got to play with this. I've seen it played in, like, was it a modern deck or a legacy deck? I can't remember, but it's pure value. I mean, you play this, and I mean, you have the possibility of, if it doesn't get countered, to get three additional 1/1 bodies onto the battlefield. Each
not
turn.
On the battlefield, into your hand.
Into your hand, I'm sorry. But in each turn, you could actually, you know, keep on playing more and more and more of these. And this was obviously very, very popular during Standard with Stoneforge Mystic, right? So, I mean, to be able to equip a Jit or one of the swords or whatever to this just makes it all the more powerful. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right, so just for clarity's sake, Jit was not in Standard during Copblade.
Okay.
That would be
okay.
Unbelievable.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
So, yeah, the original version of the deck, which is really interesting, there was no Stoneforge Mystic. There was just, the only creature in the entire deck was four Squadron Hawks. That was it. Now, full disclosure, the deck usually won with Celestial Colonnade. Okay. And that deck was called Ka-Go.
Okay.
And the evolution of it becoming Ka-Blade came whenever they added Stoneforge Mystic to basically that deck.
Oh my gosh, that would have been such a good time. I mean, Celestial Colonnade, this, I mean, Jace, I mean, wow, would have been awesome.
I mean, there's a lot. And the guys over at Constructive Criticism did a whole thing about the history of Primeval Titan with Valakut and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And they got into a little bit of the Ka-Blade era of Standard, which I think really tells the tale. But it's just really weird to think about, for a time, Jace, Stoneforge Mystic, Splinter Twin, and Valakut were all in the same Standard together.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And, I mean, everything was just super powerful, right? And there were other decks, of course, but
were there, though? Like, I mean, were there?
yeah. And so, I mean, Ka-Blade existed. It's a weird kind of history, but basically, the deck could have existed for about 3 months, but no one discovered it yet.
Okay.
Then there was a Pro Tour in Paris. I think I might have told this story on the air before.
Yeah.
But there's a Pro Tour in Paris. Somebody figured this out for Channel Fireball. Independently of them, the Japanese team figured it out as well. And so it kind of became weird how nobody had it, and then all of a sudden, the light bulb came on.
Yeah.
And then everybody had it. And I think I told this. I brought it to an FNM and just cruised. But what was also crazy about that era of Standard was those card prices overnight, like, quadrupled.
Mm-hmm.
So a Stoneforge Mystic was like $5, went to $20, $25, $30. And so you showed up to FNM Standard and there were only a few guys with Ka-Blade in the room. Now, if you went to a Grand Prix or a Star City Open, everybody had it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you would show up to FNM and everyone just had their own little deck and they were specifically engineering their deck to beat Ka-Blade and they could not.
Yeah. Wow.
So it was so funny and a really great time, and I won a lot of money. That's probably the most important part of that year. But if you ever wonder, where did Curtis's Legacy cards come from?
Yeah.
There you go.
Magic is always so much more fun when you're playing Ka-Blade, right?
Yeah. When you're just like you with Treasure Cruise, when you went on that like crazy modern winning streak.
Yeah.
Because you were playing Blue Red Delver. You're like, man, this deck.
I cracked it. I mean,
I'm so skilled.
Yes.
Anyway, dude. So let's go ahead and get out of this show. If someone wants to lend their support to Dustin, they can hit him up at MTG Dustin.
That is correct.
If they want to talk to you personally, where could they go?
At Cameron_McCoy.
And I am at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is at SpikeFeedMTG. We'd love to hear your feedback, and we will catch you guys next week.